Hi, I'm Robert Osborne. Thanks so much for joining me for TCM's Private Screenings Uncut, a chance for you to hear the complete conversations from our TCM archives with guests that I've interviewed for TCM's Private Screening specials. When we do tape a Private Screenings interview, I usually sit with a guest and talk for at least a couple of hours, out of which only about an hour or less makes it to the air. So Private Screenings Uncut is a chance for you to hear the whole conversation uncut as it happened. And this next one holds a very special place in my memory bank. It was tough to do. It was gratifying, a bit nerve-wracking, also complicated, but fascinating. It's a visit I had with a lady nicknamed the Blonde Bombshell, the Jitterbug, the Huttenthot, all names that really perfectly summed up the nearly uncontainable force that seemed to propel Betty Hutton. When I sat down with Betty Hutton in the year 2000, she'd been out of the public eye for about 17 years and had rarely done an interview in 30 years. All that time out of the spotlight had played havoc with Betty's confidence, and she admitted during our interview that she came very close to canceling the day before. But she stuck with me and talked for nearly 2 hours about her complicated life and once phenomenal career. She came from very humble beginnings. She found fame at a very young age, worked on the stage among such legends as producer Billy Rose and Broadway dynamo Ethel Merman. Then she was in films, wowed audiences with her exuberance and spunk and charm in films such as Incendiary Blonde, The Miracle of Morgan's Creek, and Annie Get Your Gun. But mixed in with all that success were all sorts of demons, plus several unsuccessful marriages, alcoholism, and mental health issues, and it all took its toll on her. But Betty's life changed when she met a Catholic priest named Father McGuire, who really helped her shake off some of those demons and very much helped her find some peace at long last. And Betty talks about all this in the interview, which you'll notice does get a little frenetic at times, much like Betty was both on screen and in life. But when she calms down and focuses, she is incredible. She has great stories to share, even a song or two. So sit back and enjoy. Here's part one of TCM's Private Screenings Uncut, Betty Hutton. Betty, thanks so much for being here. I can't tell you how nice it is to have Betty Hutton here.
Oh, Bob.
And welcome.
Thank you. Bob, I love you. I'm so glad you are my first introduction back in the showbiz.
And I hope a happy one.
Yes, a very happy one, Bob. I love you.
Thank
you. When I think about it, Bob, I opened on Broadway at Billy Rose's Casamignano when I was 15. And then I did two for the show, Panama Hattie with Ethel Merman.
Right.
At 19, I went to Hollywood. But people think, God, she's been around forever. And that's true.
Just started as a baby.
3 years old, yeah. With my mom sold booze in our house. It was illegal.
I want to get into all of that.
Okay.
But also, one of the fascinating things to me is the fact that you always kind of wore your heart on your sleeve. I mean, you had such a desire to entertain.
I still do, Bob. I like to make people happy. It does something to my soul. I think that's why I loved Father McGuire so much. He's the first person that I didn't have to pretend I wasn't upset. And, you know, you pretend so many things because you don't want anybody to know, yeah, I hurt inside. Let him think that it's always fun,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it gets to be pretty heavy at times.
I want to get into that, but when you stopped as a full-scale entertainer, did you ever think there would be a time when you wouldn't be out there entertaining, or?
Well, I don't know. It comes so slowly, you know. I left Paramount. I gave them my contract back because the scripts were so bad, and I played Vegas four times mm-hmm. in the summer, four times in the winter. I went to Europe, so I was on the stage all the time. And 25 years ago, when I found Father McGuire, I quit. And then I would just go out and entertain the nuns or Catholic gatherings. And oh, Bob, I found me. I never knew who the hell Betty was until then. I was a commodity, Betty Hutton, hot dog, you know. But the me that you knew from our only interview and my last one, I just sat down with you and it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you're an okay guy and I wasn't afraid of you. Like I sit here now, Bob, and the tears are coming out of my eyes. That memory was so beautiful that day because my great songwriters were there, Livingston and Evans, to each his own, all those great songs. And that's where I met you, Bob. And it was great.
Well, I hope you have that memory after today.
Oh, Bob, looking at you now, you haven't changed one day.
Well, you haven't either. Oh. You haven't either. You look great, Betty.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
I want to go back kind of to the beginning and find out from you when you first realized what a big star you were when you first became a star.
I don't think I ever realized.
Really?
When I got very hurt about being a star is when I did Annie at MGM. I had never been at another studio. And remember, I replaced
sure.
Judy Garland.
Let's get into that a little bit.
She didn't want that picture. It was not right for her. But she got very sick, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Berlin was furious that she didn't do it. And they put my dressing room right above Judy. And Judy and I knew each other. But professionally, it was very wrong of them to put me right above her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to hurt her.
Because they'd actually fired her for the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they liked to hurt her. I'll never understand it. Because that child never grew up. She never found Judy. I will never forget, Bob, when I went to Broadway the last time, and her daughter, Liza Minnelli, she called her to come to the wedding. And she said, I can't, Mother. I'll come to the next one.
Wow.
I mean, that's rough. But your kids, Judy and I became very good friends in Vegas, really good friends. And we would talk about our children, that they didn't understand we also have pain. We didn't want our kids to ever feel any pain. And as I found out, they grew up a little spoiled, Bob, because you do everything for them that you didn't have. And by the way, did you get my marks?
I did.
From college?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I wanted you to see
that,
Bob.
Great.
I was so
I want to get into all of that.
I just had
your kids. How many kids do you have?
I have three daughters, and I have two grandchildren. And are you ready for this? I have three great-grandchildren.
Wow.
They better never call me grandmother.
Now, do you have a good relationship with your kids?
Not too good. Not too good. I think, Bob, the God's truth is I've had a real bad year. And when I came here, when Father McGuire died 2 years ago, and I came to California, I thought to be near them. I had never been here. I had been 25 years in Rhode Island. And I think, Bob, they were afraid I was going to be a burden, that I didn't have any money, and that they'd have to support me. I thought, oh, my God, never would I move in with them, Bob. I just came here to be near them because I love them so much. But I do understand. When people get older, Bob, they're a bore. That's what they think. But it's not true. You have all this warmth inside. But, you know, Bob, in America, they're different than the foreign people. They keep their parents with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents
part of the tradition.
Have a lot. Yeah, because they have a lot of tradition in them. And I was disappointed that way. But I love them so much that I understand they're afraid I'm going to be sick. I understand, and I may get sick. You know, you always do. Finally, you gotta die from something. I'll die from stage fright, Bob. It won't be anything else. But I just want them to know, if they see this show, how much I love them, Bob. It's been very hard on me, because this last year, Bob, after Father died, I didn't know where to turn anymore. I could always call Father and say, Father, this is rough, what'll I do? And I would go to the phone, and naturally, Father's not there. But for 25 years, I thank God for that. I had the most wonderful time, because Father said, you're just a little kid that's brokenhearted. He had never seen a movie, by the way. He had never been to the movies, period. He was my age, and I said, come with me. And then I took him to Broadway when I replaced, Annie?
Dorothy Loudon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many people out front. There were nuns and priests and just people that I had to go out on the balcony and ask them to go away because the cars couldn't get through. That was a great charge for me, for Father.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't believe what I just saw. You know, I said, well, that's the big responsibility, Father. You can never disappoint them, never.
Was he the most influential person you've ever met in your life?
Yes. Buddy DeSilva was in movie. Remember, he did
exactly
those shows on Broadway. He did DuBarry Was a Lady, and he did Panama Hattie, which I did with Ethel Merman.
Great songwriter, and then became the head of Paramount Pictures.
Well, you know what happened that night? That Ethel Merman, that my opening night, took my only good number out of the show.
Panama Hattie.
Yes. was somebody, all I got to get now is my man. And remember that big, tall butler?
Arthur Treacher.
Arthur Treacher. It was a number with him. And I said, what do you mean the number's out? I was in my dressing room. And I said, it can't be. It's the only one I got. And I ran up to meet Buddy. He was sitting in one of those, fancy seats. I said, Buddy, what the hell is this? My only number's gone. He said, she has that kind of power. I said, Buddy, we opened out of town in Boston. We've done two benefit shows here. Why didn't you? He said, she didn't tell me till tonight.
Wow.
And they yanked it like that. Well, I went on the stage so brokenhearted. That was a night. So Buddy said, Betty, if you'll stay with the show, I'm going to Paramount. I'm the first one, he told, and I will take you out there and I will make you a star. And we shook hands and
wow.
I did the show.
And did he ever?
Yeah.
So he became the head of Paramount
head
Pictures.
Head of Paramount.
And you went
out
there.
He wrote screenplays for me, and he was just fantastic. But the only warm, wonderful man was Father McGuire, because I needed to tell somebody how I hurt. See, I didn't have a father. I guess I did have a father, but you
well,
know.
Let's talk a little about your family history.
All right.
Now, you grew up.
I was born in Battle Creek, Michigan, where the vitamin foods come from, Kellogg's. And then
that explains a lot.
Yeah. Then we moved to Lansing, Michigan. And my mother ran a blind pig, they called them. Have you ever heard that?
No.
Well, you weren't allowed to sell liquor. It was against the law. But my mother had no education, and it was a real easy way to make money. We had beer and bathtub gin. I'll never forget this. And I was only 3 years old, my first memory of a man trying to beat my mother. So I went into song right then. I was a big three. I remember like it was yesterday. So they wouldn't hurt her, because men, when they drink, get very, very tough. So that's when I started singing. And my mother, the police came one day, and you couldn't get into that lake where we lived outside of Lansing unless, you'd know police were coming.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great big Hudson, and my sister drove it into the bushes, because we got a message they were coming. So the police threw us out of there Michigan. We had to get out of Lansing. So we went from there to Detroit, Michigan. And in all this time, Bob, I was singing. My mother played guitar and piano by ear. No lessons,
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so sorry for her, Bob. She had been thrown out of her home when she was only 9 years old. So my mother drank. She was a total alcoholic. But she was the most brilliant, wonderful woman. And I loved her. And I thought, I'm going to be a star. Oh, she took me to see the Chaplin movie. It was silent, And I looked at him. I thought, I'm going to be a star. And my mother will stop drinking. That was the only reason that I wanted to be a star then, And anyway, I didn't tell you the part. When they caught her with the liquor, I forget whether it was Lansing or Battle. I think it was Lansing when they caught her red-handed. They told her to get out of town, or she couldn't see us anymore. I was with a friend of hers. If she didn't get out of town, they would take us away from her. So my mother just sobbed, and she got us, and we got out of town, and we went to Detroit, Michigan. And not to disconnect the stories, but when I went back there with Let's Dance with Fred Astaire, I went back to Michigan, and my mother was with me, and they got cops in front of us, 4,000 of them, because now I'm a big star, And I said, Mom, look at that. She said, well, at least this time they're in front of us.
You stayed very close to your mom, too, didn't you?
I should never have gotten married. My mother was so close to me, and I didn't understand marriage, Bob. I was no good at it.
Did you have a father that was around?
I don't know who my father was.
Mm.
That's why Father McGuire meant so much to me. He was everything I had read a father should be.
Mm.
He loved me, Bob. And some people even had the wrong notion that kind of love, which was Christ's love, it totally surrounds you. There's no sex, none of that, which I'm not knocking sex, but when you find a priest like Jesus said in the Bible, he was going to leave these wonderful men. Well, I never met one of them, Bob. He was it. Like my grandchildren, he helped me put one through college. You know, he just was that kind of a human
being. So you didn't have any role model for a father or anything like that?
Father was the role that I had read in books, that I had read in the Bible. He was it.
Okay, so you saw Charlie Chaplin. You decided you were going to be a star.
Yeah.
But when did you find out you had talent to be able to do that?
Well,
when did you find out you could really sing?
Well, I sang all my life from 3 years old on. I didn't realize that I didn't think I was any good. I did. I couldn't sing good, but boy, I sure sang loud. That's one of my famous lines. You know?
But you have a great voice, you know, and in the movies, you do the boisterous stuff, but you could also sing a ballad and just break somebody's heart with it.
Thank you.
I mean, you have
you.
A wonderful singing
thank
voice.
Thank you very much. You know? I had some great ballads. I wish I didn't love you so. Where are you? I'm scared. Do you remember Where Are You?
From Cross My Heart.
Yeah, and it had to be you. I had to be you. I did that in Incendiary Blonde.
Blonde, yes. Yeah. Well, also, you developed a style that was unique. You were one of a kind. I mean,
I'm totally unaware.
You did something that no one else had done. You had this boisterous style. You were not only were you beautiful as a comedian, and most comedians were like Martha Raye or something that were, you know, and they would do things, but you were this beautiful woman that had this boisterous style when you sang and danced that nobody else did. Where did that come from?
I think, Bob, because I didn't think I could sing. I had to keep moving, you know. And then when I opened on Broadway in Billy Rose's Casamignana, I was only 15. I was with Lopez. I had won a contest with him. And when I went on the stage at the Casamignana, they put me in because their relief, you know, the guys that did the tumbling and all, they were the opening act and they didn't show up. So Billy Rose, who didn't know me from a bale of hay, I saw him trucking down to the stage and he said, get her on, we have nobody to open the show. That's before the good show went on. So I thought, I can't sing good, so I'll keep moving. That's exactly what I did. And I sang a song that, a tisket, a tisket, I lost my yellow basket. And I would dance, and I picked Lopez up, who weighed 400 pounds, I think, and swung him around and sat him down, and they were screaming out there. And then I took the curtain and swung from there into the middle of the stage. I thought, there, they'll never know that I couldn't sing.
Wow.
And what happened was Orson Welles was out there that night, and Barnard Baruch. These were the people, as a child, I grew up with, you know. And Lou Holtz had to come out and tell them to stop the applause. He said, tonight you're seeing what we call a star is born.
Wow.
I just looked at him like he was crazy, you know, and I just started to cry.
Start a whole style.
Yeah.
That many people, June Allison, early in her career, adopted that whole style. I mean, trying
she
to be
adopted
Betty Hutton.
Me.
Yeah.
You know, she was in Panama Hattie with me, and she wanted my part, you know, when I left the show, or if I got sick. I worked so hard with her, and Buddy was furious. He said, Betty, you never take a chorus girl and teach them anything. They're no good. And I said, Buddy, you're wrong. This is the sweetest girl. And anyway, I worked very hard with her, really, and taught her everything that she knows. And the show was over, and I left. She went into a show called, Best Foot Forward, right, Bob. And I thought, oh, she's going to be so happy. I'm going to fly back and sit in the front row, and I did. Sat in the front row, I waved at her, nothing. Mm. I had sent her flowers, so I thought, well, maybe she's just nervous. And I went backstage, and I said she didn't want to see me.
Wow.
That hurt me so bad, Bob, because she had my style, which I was thrilled with. Mm. And then she came to Hollywood, and the same thing went on. I don't know why, I never understood it, because I loved her. I thought, oh, this is such a special gal. But she wasn't special to me, you know.
Okay, so now you left in your desire to be a star. You went to New York at 15.
Yeah.
And what happened then? You went with Vincent Lopez
and his orchestra? When I left him, I went, I did a lot of theaters after I left Billy Rose's Casamignana. And I had Harry James. He just left the Benny Goodman Band. And Harry and I were on the road around New York, New Jersey. And it was such a great show, Bob. He said, they wanted to do a number with me. And do you remember the song, I Wish I Didn't Love You So?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, there's a verse in that, and I was like a tomboy then, as you know. And the verse was, "Oh man, sunshine, listen you. Never tell me dreams come true. You try it, and I'll start a riot. Beatrice Fairfax, don't you dare ever tell me he'll care. I'm certain it's the final curtain. They're writing songs of love, but not for me. Our lucky stars up above, but not for me." I won't sing the rest, but you dig in that. And, oh, and Harry came down and played Obbligato behind me. He fell in love with me, and I in love with him. We were just kids, you know, and we played that whole circuit. And then I went into Broadway shows. But at 19, I went to Hollywood, just like Buddy promised me. And I took my mom with me, and we had not a suite, you know, the smaller, what do they call them on a train? I forget.
Compartment.
Compartments, yeah. I thought, this is great. My mother will never drink again, because Lopez sent for me. And I said, Mom, I'll be right back. And I went in to see him. He was a nightmare. You know,
Vincent Lopez, the band leader.
I was only, you know, I was such a kid. And anyway, that night I thought, I got to get back to my mom. And I got into our rooms, and my mother, still, the drinking was there. She went from beer to scotch. That's the only thing I changed.
Upgraded.
Oh, she said, this is great, Betty. I thought, oh dear God, this can't be. It's going to be more expensive. So that was my transition into Hollywood.
When you first got to Hollywood, what did you think of it?
I don't know. Well, you know what was cool when I got there? But there were orange trees when you got off the train. It smelled so good. Mm-hmm. I love how California smelled then. But it was like a little country town when I went there. But when I went over to Paramount, I became terrified. All those stars that I'd only seen, you know, Marlene Dietrich, Paulette Goddard, Claudette Colbert, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope. Wow! And Bob Hope's on one side of me, and Claudette Colbert on the other, and Bing. And we had bicycles, and it said on the, you know, girl singer, boy singer, comic, that you didn't have fancy cars like they have at MGM. And I know, I went on the set the first day, and it was hot. All these lights, I said, oh my God, I can't take the heat. And the wonderful guys around said, she's right. And they put on coats and turned on the air conditioning, and my stages were always called Hutton's Polar Palace. So
now, your very first film was The Fleet Sand with Dorothy L'Amour and William Holden and getting top billing, but you really just walked
Eddie
off.
Eddie Bracken.
You walked off with the picture. Your very first film.
Well, don't you remember what they had me do? I went over a wall. Right up my alley, you know, I take a curtain and land there.
Yes.
So it was a 5-minute sketch. I never, ever did anything that tough going over that wall. Do you recall?
Yes,
I do. It was a really funny scene.
And also carrying Eddie Bracken up a whole flight of stairs.
Yes, flight of stairs.
And that also the wonderful, one of your signature songs, Arthur Murray Taught Me Dancing.
In a Hurry, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, turkey trot or gabata, don't know which, you don't know what, jitterbug, bunny hug, long as you cut a rug, walk the dog, do the clog, lindy hop to your drop, ball to jack, back to back, cheek to your weak. I've heard of Pav Lovable Jack Muller. And make way for the queen of the dance. I'm sorry, Bob, I can't sing this early.
But that started, again, a whole revolution. And all of a sudden, overnight, practically, you were Paramount's biggest female star.
Well, they wrote these great songs for me. I had Johnny Mercer.
Right.
Livingston and Evans.
Frank Lesser.
Oh, Frank Lesser. He wrote, Murder, he says, every time we kiss, Murder. I mean, they were great songwriters. I was lucky. They don't have great songwriters anymore, Bob.
Right.
These guys worked so hard with me. You know?
Was there a master plan that Buddy DeSella had for you, or did that just all kind of fall into place?
I said to him, can't I have a stand-in? Because everybody, he said, no, I don't want anybody to do anything that she doesn't do. I want her photographed. He was very tough about me because he told me he'd make me a star. So I would just stand there and do whatever he told me to do. But then as I my third picture, I think I started in just a minute here. I know what I'm supposed to do. And I made so many mistakes, Bob. But he'd come right over on the set and say, who's telling you to do this stuff?
But now after your third, you did three films there, and then they co-starred you with Bob Hope. That was your first really big male co-star, and let's face it.
I didn't do that picture, though. He took me out of it.
Let's Face It?
Uh-huh. No, Let's Face It was Fred Astaire.
That's Let's Dance.
I didn't do any. He would not appear with me.
Bob Hope?
If you remember the picture, no. He was very gracious about it. He said, I was on his radio show all the time. Uh-huh.
And also a wonderful command performance that you did.
Yeah.
Where you did Murder, He Says.
Yes. I worked with him a lot off stage, but he said, Betty, you're too much like me. I don't want you in movies. And, you know, I understood him, but I was always on his radio shows, you know. But on the screen, we were very similar. We moved kind of the same way, you know. Uh-huh. Lucille Ball was good with him. Mm-hmm. And
Dorothy L'Amour worked with him a lot. Paulette Goddard worked with him.
Yeah, because their faces never did anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what he liked, because he worked with his body and his face. Because we aren't that good if you really examine us, you know.
When was there a lot of camaraderie on the studio lot? Was that like a family there?
Well, Martin and Lewis, when they came, it started to be more fun, yeah. But like Claudette Colbert was so particular about every move she made. So until Martin and Lewis, we didn't have much fun. Bing never showed up half the time until 4 hours later, you know.
Now, you did a picture with him.
Oh,
Here
yeah,
Come the
I
Waves.
Played twins.
Twins.
Yeah.
And what was he like to work with?
Oh, he was wonderful. He was wonderful to work with, but again, a man who just came when he felt like it. Mm. And that's okay, but that's not good for the crew, the producers, and it's really rough.
Now, you became such a star so quickly at Paramount. Did the other people on the lot like make you feel it comfortable right away?
No, they did not like me because they thought I went with Buddy DeSilva, because he'd called.
Thought you were the boss's girlfriend.
Yeah, and who he was sleeping with was his secretary. I can tell you that now because he's gone. You know, I just adored him. He had a lovely secretary, but they thought it was me because he would call the makeup department and say, "I don't like this or that. But I want her done naturally." You know.
So he's kind of looking after you more than the others.
Oh, totally, totally. Then he had a very bad stroke. After he left Paramount, I left it. You know, the businessmen of. Pardon me, TV started to take over, and we all said, it won't last. TV won't last, you know. But Buddy had a very bad stroke, and then my luck started to change. And I was so grateful to God that I got Annie Get Your Gun, because he would have bought that for me had he not been so ill. And then I did the DeMille picture.
Right. I want to go back just a little before we get to that, though.
Okay.
Because Preston Sturges came in there too.
That's the greatest.
Miracle of Morgan
Street.
Now, how did you meet him the first time?
Well, I was in the commissary, and I didn't know who he was or what he had done, but someone at our table said, "That man is great, and he's going to make a picture, Betty, that you'd be good in." And they told me the name of it. So I just sat around looking at him, you know, and I just got to know him by being in there. I never went to lunch until I knew he was going to make a picture. And then when he cast me in it, Buddy said to me, "Betty, this is no good." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because Eddie Bracken is going to steal that picture. That's the way the script is written." I said, "But Buddy, I don't have to sing and dance in it. I can be me." He said, "Who are you?" I said, "I don't know. There must be something else to me besides just, you know, singing." And Eddie Bracken would not do the picture if I sang a song.
Wow.
That's when that trouble started, and I adored him. We were good together.
Yeah, you made four pictures together.
Yeah,
you almost started out as a team.
And when that movie was over, he got all the cards, you know, and they have the previews that he was the best in the movie. So he came into my dressing room. He said, "Betty, thank you for making me a star." I said, "What?" He said, "I got all the notice." I said, "Wonderful." Buddy was right. You know, I never went to any of the sneaks. Now the picture opened, and I got the reviews. It was the darndest thing. And Eddie Bracken he went into Buddy and said, "Buddy, I never want to be in a picture with her again. Because when she sings, forget it." And Buddy said, "Eddie, you're wrong. You two are great together." Well, anyway, Eddie went to Broadway. He made one more picture, and I think that was it. So years later, he asked me to come to a preview in Washington of Miracle. You know, that's one of the great pictures of all time.
Miracle of Morgan
Street. Yes, and it's in, you know, in
the
Washington.
Archives.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he ran the picture when we went there, and I laughed. I had never seen it, the whole movie. He said, "Why the hell are you laughing?" I said, "Eddie, I've never seen it." He said, "You're kidding." I said, "No, I'm not. I've never seen it." And I said, "Eddie, why did you do that to me? Why didn't you want to be?" He said, "That was the greatest mistake of my life." I said, Eddie, I loved you so I couldn't understand it. He said, Betty, I just had a thing. If you sang in a picture, I was cooked. Mm-hmm. I said, but I didn't sing in Miracle. He said, oh, well, it didn't matter. He said, now I know it didn't matter.
He was cooked anyway. Yeah. So what was Sturgis like to work with?
He was fantastic. We didn't work much. We'd go to work in the morning, and he'd hand us whatever we were doing that day. He didn't want any, none of us knew what the Miracle was. Nobody. And then he'd go with his secretary back to the studio, and we'd just sit on the lot all day. We maybe would shoot 12, 15 minutes a day, top. It was great. And he owned the restaurant out there,
the Players.
So he would send fabulous food to us so nobody would complain, you know. And it took us a long time to do that picture because he didn't like to work long. And he was also going with his secretary. So I think he wrote that picture, and it was so great. When he was on the set, it was a ball. But Buddy didn't like him because he didn't hit schedules, mm-hmm. you know, the businessman. Mm-hmm. But he you couldn't expect him to. He was so great.
Did he give you a lot of direction?
No. I mean, no.
Did anybody ever give him
no. direction? No. He said, you're all very professional. I want you to give to me. You got the script for the day. And we just read, and we didn't know what he was going to, you know, what the end was. So Eddie and I and the little girl who's since died.
Diana Lynn.
We would, like actors on the stage, we kind of made it up as we went along. That's why the picture was so good. Nobody ever let you do that. But Preston, he trusted the actors. Mm. He said, go, do it, Betty. Eddie, do what I've written. And that's why that
it was a very daring story too, wasn't it? About a girl who gets impregnated by a man and can't remember who it was.
Couldn't remember who it was.
Yeah.
Well, today, you know, then, if you remember, Bob, you weren't even allowed to. If you were married in a picture, you couldn't even touch their foot or be in a bed together.
Right.
So I don't know. That was better.
He got away with it.
Yeah. Oh, that's how he said. If it's funny, they'll never touch it, and it was so funny, and all the men who. Tell you that can't be in the movie. They all had to go to the previews. They laughed so hard you didn't even think for a minute that there was something wrong with that picture morally, you know?
One of the great classic films
of
all time.
Yeah, it's in Washington. It's for the, and Greatest Show won an Academy Award, so I've been in some pretty great movies.
Indeed.
Annie, I was going to tell you, that hurt me so badly. Because of Judy, when I flew myself into New York because they weren't going to fly me in, and I took my children, and I sat in my hotel.
Was this for the premiere of Annie Gets
the Guy? Annie opened in New York. And I got to New York and let them know I was there. They did not invite me.
MGM didn't invite you?
Hand to God.
Wow.
This is the first time I've ever told this story. I just sat there and cried. And it got great reviews. They said it wouldn't because of Ethel Merman was the toast of the town. It got great
Ethel
reviews.
Ethel having done it on Broadway originally.
They
thought nobody in New York would like it
would
because
like
Ethel
it,
Merman.
Especially
it was
the critics.
Merman's part.
And it came out in the critics said that it was better. Because remember what? I had no makeup. I played Annie like a kid would. We made, we took water and put walnuts in the water and mixed it up. And that was splashed on my face. No makeup at all. And then over my freckles, we made them bigger, you know?
I have to tell you, when I saw Annie Get Your Gun, it's the first time I ever saw in a movie theater the whole audience applaud after a number. That's what people did in legitimate theaters, not in a movie theater.
I
but after
know.
You Can't Get a Man with a Gun, the whole audience in Seattle, Washington applauded.
I mean, that was
an Academy Award performance.
I never saw it except years later. They never invited me to one thing.
Did you ever figure that out? Why?
Well, I did figure it out right away. It was because of Judy. And that's okay. But she didn't want that movie because we talked about it afterwards. She said, Betty, that was not my kind of movie. Because she was sophisticated.
Uh-huh.
You know, she said, I'm glad you've got it. I don't like the part. But MGM wanted to work her again. She couldn't work anymore, Bob. Judy was sick, really sick. And they didn't believe her. But there were many shows she couldn't show up for. I saw her at the Copa in New York, and she was married to Sid Luft then. And she just said, Betty, I just hate it. I only perform because I'm broke. I tell you, Bob, that was so hard to hear from her. She was so fabulous.
Yes, she
There's
was.
There's never been a talent like Judy Garland, and there never will be another one. She was and she was great inside. They had used her up so badly, Bob. There was nothing left of her. You know, at MGM, they called her the little hunchback. Mm. I mean, it was so cruel what they did to her. Yeah.
I don't know. But it's interesting that she got those results coming from doing the work for a totally opposite reason than you did.
Exactly.
You worked because of the love of the work and the audience and getting the love back from the audience.
Yes. She never, ever had a problem with money because she made it all of her life and through movies, and she never knew she'd have a problem. But Bob, they did pump her full of medicine. She got too heavy, they'd give her medicine. If she was nervous, she got some other kind of medicine. She was a bag of medicine.
Did they ever try to do that to you?
Oh, are you kidding? I'd have punched him in the nose. No way. But when I was at Metro, they would send a car for me. And then I brought my bike over. I said, I don't want to get in their car. The guys got so mad at me because they're union. I didn't understand. I thought they'd have fun if I was on a bike. I think it was because most of them, they weren't kind to them, Bob. Pardon me. They sent chauffeurs, and they had all the red carpet treatment. Mm-hmm. But there was no love in their hearts for those people.
Was that different at Paramount?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So the totally different atmosphere.
Totally different. It was like, when I got back to Paramount, I was so thrilled. Cecil B. DeMille treated me like I was a queen. I went back to do his movie after Annie, you know. No, they were warm. I think that came down from Buddy, because he was such a great man. He could do anything. He could write. He could write songs, anything. Where most men, heads of studios like MGM,
right, executives,
they weren't performers.
Right, right.
So how did they know how a performer felt?
Right. Back to Paramount, right after Miracle on Morgan's Creek. I've always thought it was interesting that you were such a good actress in that without the songs. Uh-huh. Was there ever any other talk about you doing non-musicals?
No.
And why didn't they pursue that further?
Well, because it was very close around that Buddy became ill.
Oh.
I never had another good script after Buddy. If I hadn't done Annie and DeMille's movie, I don't know where I'd be today, because DeMille's movie will play forever.
Except those films that you did do, Incendiary Blonde, Store Club, those were smash hits.
I know. Well, they don't have them on TV, though.
Well, they're around. But, I mean, they were sensational box office pictures at the time. People wanted to see Betty Hutton, you know. Incendiary Blonde set an all-time record at the Paramount Theater in New York.
Oh, I was so proud of that, yeah.
That's a script you wanted to do.
And Perils of Pauline, both of them were great. Buddy was up and fighting then. You know, when I went back to Broadway at the Palace, I followed Danny Kaye and Judy in there. I thought, oh, golly, what am I going to do? You know, it'll be hot. And I invited Barnard Baruch, and everybody in New York knew this great, great man. Have I told you this before? And I called him and invited him to come to the Palace to see me. And he came, he had a nurse by then. And I told you I was with him all of my life in the beginning. He taught me everything that I knew. And he sat down and he had this mane of gray hair. I mean, loads of it. And he was beautiful, had a nurse with him. And I introduced him and he stood up and that audience stood up, they went crazy. And when he came backstage, he said, Betty, you always said, why didn't you run for the presidency? He said, if I had known that people liked me, I said, oh, Mr. Baruch, they adore you. But he was too old to start then. But he was my mentor when I was 15.
When did you first meet him?
15 years old, when I was at the Cosmo. He came to the Cosmo. Billy Rose was a good friend of his. He taught Buddy everything he knew also, I mean, about money. Billy Rose got very rich with stocks and bonds, you know. And he would come to the Casa Manana, and that's how I met him. And then I used to go sit on the benches with him. And I'd ask him all the dumb questions, and he loved me. He said, Betty, do this, do that. And he'd hand me books to read. He became a very close friend of mine.
So he was almost a surrogate father for a while.
Yes, he certainly was. And then he became ill after I went to Hollywood, you know.
A lot of the movies that you made, I think it's interesting, the Paramount Pictures were based on lives of other famous performers, like Texas Guinan and Incendiary Blonde, Blossom Seeley, Pearl White, and Paris
Somebody Loves Me was the one that
Blossom Seeley. That's one of the great undiscovered gems, I think, today. It's one of the great films.
Why that didn't come off as good as it should? I wanted Frank Sinatra, and he was not very well then. He was having a lot of trouble with his throat. This is before he became hot in Hollywood. And I said to Pearl Bergen, see, you've got to get him. He is the song and dance man of all time. And nobody thought that of him in Hollywood.
Right, right.
He had not
made. He was in his low period in Hollywood.
He was so ill in
just before From Here to Eternity.
Yes.
That was.
He was in New York when he had this trouble, but I knew him. Mm-hmm. And he would have been fabulous. Yeah. Think about that movie.
Yeah.
And they put that dreadful man in there that had done Picnic.
Ralph Meeker.
Ooh. He was terrible.
Well, he wasn't a song and dance man.
He wasn't anything. He wasn't an actor. He would spit before, you know. Oh, to God, maybe you have to be like this to be on Broadway and Picnic. Because they said, well, we got this hot star. I said, oh, Ralph Meeker. Holy cow, he was terrible. Not just in the songs. He just didn't have anything inside of him. Well, he never did.
Still one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
I love that film.
It was a good film.
Great songs, too.
Can you imagine if Sinatra had been in there,
been
what it would have been?
That would have brought him back.
And I, you know, a Pearl Bergen Seton, after the fact, sent me flowers and said, we're sorry, Betty. Mm. You were right, because that our picture did not make money. Somebody Loves Me. And they went back to Metro. And they really realized how great he was after From Here to Eternity. Mm-hmm. But I knew him as a person. Mm-hmm. Not just
how about Fred Astaire?
He's the love of my life. Oh yeah, he was the greatest man. You know, when I was doing the movie, when we rehearsed, I was so scared of him. You know, on my hair, we put pink yarn and braided my hair in the back, and I was so scared of him. And he came on the rehearsal stage one day. He only had a few hairs. He always wore his hat. And he took off the hat, and he had these little pink ribbons tied on four or five pieces of hair, you know. And he said I was the only one that ever did a take with him without stopping that it worked. Because I said, I can't do it twice. You know, when they'd come in and say, can you do a boit, ma, and a terge? I said, a what? Just show me the step, and I can do it. But I don't know all that dialogue, you know. So they would show me, and I could do it. Because from the streets I danced, we just did that stuff, you know? And Fred Astaire came from the same kind of thing, from theater. Of course, he was always a hit from his whole life. But he was a dear, wonderful man.
So was he difficult to rehearse with at all?
No.
Because you always hear he was such a perfectionist.
He was a perfectionist, but so am
I.
Whatever he did, I would do it 40,000 times over. But when it came to camera, I said, I'm telling you right now, if we do it and we get, it was a 5-minute number, please don't do it again. I don't think I can do it twice. And sure enough, that first take, he said, cut, that's it.
Great.
Never had to do it twice.
So right about that time, then came Annie Get Your Gun. Had you seen Annie Get Your Gun on Broadway?
Yes.
Did you ever talk to Paramount about maybe getting it for you?
I talked to Buddy about it, because it was a long time before they bought that, you know. But Buddy died, you know, not died, he had that terrible stroke, and Metro got it. And MGM did make the best musicals, no two ways about it. But I didn't know anybody there. But I knew one businessman there and his girlfriend, and I said, you know, if I can get that picture, I'll bet you $5,000 I could do it right. And what happened after Judy conked out, they tested, pardon me, June Allison, Betty Garrett, everybody, but they didn't do it right to suit him. They had a shot with Judy a lot of the picture, you know, and they brought me in, and I recorded 12 songs in one day. We just did it, you know, because I loved it so. But the cast were awful to me. They wanted Judy in the part. I don't blame them, but I was there, and Howard Keel. They were just terrible to me.
Really?
Yeah, the crew, everybody. Annie was the heartbreak of my life. I wanted that picture so badly, and I had the worst experience, Bob, with those
people.
On
a day by day.
Yeah,
oh,
it was hard, you know.
Well, it never shows in the picture.
I know it doesn't. Well,
so
that's
good.
Because you can't let it show. I shouldn't let it show here either, but I have to tell you what's on my heart. That broke my heart. Annie Get Your Gun was the end of me inside.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, and it should have been the peak for you.
It was the end of me. And that picture goes on and on, as you know. The public adore it.
Yes.
But I just turned my back on it. And I didn't have another movie after that. I left Paramount. I bought
Right after that came The Greatest Show on Earth.
Yes.
And how did you get that? Because I understand that when that originally came up, DeMille really wanted someone like Marlene Dietrich or Hedy Lamarr as Holly.
No, he wanted a trapeze artist, one that he knew, and he was going to teach her how to act. And I heard about this movie, and I got some still people, you know, that work on a still bar. They don't swing around. And I said, teach me what you do on the trapeze. So I would do all these things with them. We weren't moving, but it was all the still bar. So I ran into DeMille again in the commissary, and I slipped, and I knocked DeMille down. It's one of his favorite stories. And he looked at me. I said, oh, Mr. DeMille. He said, oh, and he didn't know who I was, you know. I went back to the table. Somebody at the table said, that's Cecil B. DeMille. I said, oh, my God, and I want that part, you know. So I went into his studio, and there were loads of secretaries, and they all loved me. They didn't know me. And I said, what do I do in there? And they said, don't worry, Betty, you're not going to get the part anyway. He's going to get a trapeze person and teach her how to act. I said, I already know how to do that stuff. They said, well, then tell him. So I went in to this great man. And the first thing, after we talked, he said, no, Betty, I'm going to hire someone, because you have to be 3 years old to start this. And I said, oh, Mr. DeMille, please let me try. He said, let me see your feet. I said, what? He was on the trapeze, your feet have to look beautiful. I didn't get it, so I took my shoes off, and he said, perfect. All right, let's talk about it. What can you do? I said, well, I think I can do it. I didn't tell him that I had already had the still bar down pat. I said, why don't you come over to the stage in a couple of weeks, and I'll show you. And he came over, and now I had the trapeze people by then, and the net was under me, and they had taught me how to do the swing, but I had muscles up to here by then, you know. And I took off and did it. He came over and I did it. He said, I don't believe it. I just don't believe that you haven't done this since you were 3 years old. I said, Mr. DeMille, I've done it for a year, getting ready for it, you know. So that's how I got the part.
Wow. Big picture. And you actually toured a bit with the circus and shot a lot of stuff during
actual... Oh, we shot everything in front of an audience. Yeah. The first place we did it was Philadelphia. And I went over onto the net, and I saw DeMille walking over after I had done the first big thing on the trapeze, and he came over. I swung down from the net, and he had a coin in his hand, and it's one of the greatest honors you can get from C.B. DeMille. It was, you've done something way beyond what you're supposed to do, and that's how that occurred. And we did it always, the press were there, because people would say, did she really do it? Mm-hmm. They still ask me that, you know. And all the press, and they couldn't believe it, but they saw me doing all of it. We shot always in front of crowds of people.
It has that look. It has almost a documentary feel to it.
And it was
also because it was when they were still doing the circus under the big tops.
You got
not
it.
Not in arenas.
Oh, that was so funny, Bob. I had done it, you know, 60 feet in the air at the studio. Now, when we got to Florida, where they have the tent, I can't think of it. She said to me, you're going to love it in here because you're going to be on the canvas. And it goes with the swing. I thought, wonderful. And I walk in there, and oh, my God, Bob, I looked up, and I looked up. I couldn't find it. It was 80 feet in the air.
Yikes.
I said, oh, my God, I'm going to get killed falling to the net, you know. So, and my kids came, and I did all this trapeze stuff, and I came down, and I said, well, how'd you like it? And they said, where's the band? That was my only comment for my children, you know. They expected me to do stuff like that, my children, you know.
Now, was DeMille a good director to work with?
He was wonderful. He had a heart attack on that show. And no one knew, but I slipped under him on his chair, and he sat on my lap, and this is not what DeMille, and he wore puttees, you know. I said, what? He said, Betty, I'm having a heart attack. Don't let them know. And I turned to the girl by the camera. I said, get him a brandy. She said, he doesn't drink. I said, get him a brandy. So one of the guys gave me a brandy. I poured it down his throat. He stood up, I'm just my hand to God, and directed the rest of the day. He never took a day off. He died of a bad heart. But he wanted that Oscar so badly.
And got it.
Yeah. He said, Betty, how do I get an Oscar? I've done all these pictures. I never got. I said, you know why? All that stuff you do is corny. As you know, with Paula Goddard going over the thing in the twig. I said, Mr. DeMille, that's corny. But this circus is corny. Don't do anything to it. Mm-hmm. We became real pals, and we'd pray together at night. He had great prayer in his heart for God. That's why it was so great. And he'd look over at me and say, is it too corny? Nope, it's perfect. And that's why he didn't touch it. Mm-hmm. He didn't add the DeMille. He loved to do all those crazy mm-hmm. things.
Well, his biblical things were
yes.
so kind of pretentious.
But see, this
and everything,
was always, this was... it's crazy that you're up there in the air doing uh-huh. that kind of stuff anyway. I think Cecil B. DeMille was just grateful that I didn't get killed. I was the only one that did everything, you know.
Was that a happy set as opposed to
oh,
Annie Get
yeah,
You Gun?
Yes. Oh, it was wonderful. I think MGM had an absolute score on being evil. They were mean, Bob, and there's no other word for them. And they were mean to all their stars, but I guess they were used to it. I never could have performed under them. Then I knew why I didn't get Annie in the beginning, because they couldn't treat me like that. I couldn't work. The cast almost killed me when I'd walk on the set. It was dead silence. Hmm. And you know, when you finish a take and you're something new, they always applaud you. It's sort of, it's just a given in showbiz. They would turn their backs and walk.
Almost like keeping you or holding you responsible
yes.
for Judy Garland having
exactly.
been fired.
And I loved her. She had done most of the picture, but they had to scrap it because mm-hmm. she looked sick. You know, and you can't, Annie has to look like Annie looks. Mm-hmm. But she was a very sick girl. But I'm glad in a way that I had that experience, because then I was through with movies. I didn't want it anymore. I wanted to go back on the stage, which I did in Vegas. I played New York. You remember when I played New York?
Absolutely,
Bob?
At yeah. the Palace. I saw that show yeah. at the Paramount Theater in Seattle.
Oh, did you?
I did. Before you took it to New York, you did it in Seattle. And I
yeah.
remember the whole last half of it was this sensational thing about Sophie Tucker, because you were
yes.
going to do the Sophie Tucker story.
Exactly.
It was wonderful.
Oh, I'm glad
yeah,
you saw that.
It was wonderful. Oh, dynamite.
These are things I never pulled off on the screen because I was so tired of it all. When after
So it's just the whole process of making movies that really...
It's
that
very.
Really,
you have to be full of it to do it all the time. You know, you have to be so tough, and I can't be tough. I don't know how to get there. I wish I could, but I was brought up with people who loved me. By you know the rapport between actors.
Right.
It was always
well, again,
there.
That heart on the stage.
Yeah,
that's always been part of
and
your.
And it should be. When I first came to Broadway, when I was 15, see Jolson, and I went. Because, you know, they all knew him. And I said, Mr. Joe, I am so scared. He said, good kid. I throw up before each show. Honest to God, Bob. He said, and Betty, if you lose that, you're through. And I think that's what happened to me after Annie. I became very cold on the set. I didn't want to do it anymore.